or Eric. I don't see either of them yet. Jerry, you had your hand up. Sorry.
Eric, quick question if I could. I noticed the next item has the appearance of being, well, it says prepared exclusively for us and for institutional investor only. I just want to clarify that they know this is a public meeting.
Yes. Yeah, they do.
Once they heard that, they decided not to show.
That was it. Yeah, that public meeting thing scared them off.
I'm sorry.
Jay, you had your hand up. Jay Kwan.
Yeah, just maybe a quickie to fill time while AQR joins. Mitch, you noted that trend has been up year to date, you know, in that kind of list of performance of the different strategies and exposures. It's been one of the few things really that's done well in the first part of the year, and it's done really well. Any concerns really about kind of top ticking the strategy, or I think that would be the kind of the natural question to ask is, you know, are you kind of buying high on this particular approach?
Yeah, there's been a lot of interest in the strategy amongst our peers. I don't think you really, you know, I had that issue early on, and there's been periods of time where the strategy has not done well, and it's usually associated with non-trending markets. So it doesn't always work, that's for sure. But I don't think there's really the markets are really deep, super liquid. I don't think there's really a sense of top ticking. It's not, I mean, they're in and out of these things constantly, right? And they don't have to be long. They don't have to be short. They can choose their battle. So, you know, I'd ask, and I see Eric is on, it'd be a great way for him and Kim to start their presentation. But those are my thoughts, Jay, and thanks for the question.
All right. I don't see any other hands up. So with no further ado, we can turn it over to Eric and Kim, who's also come over, it looks like. Yep. So the floor is yours, AQR. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for having us today. I just want to make sure, can you hear me okay? I have like some funky speakers.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Well, great. Well, it's lovely to meet all of you today. I am Kim Trevs. I sit on our client coverage team at AQR covering the West Coast and specifically CSERA, as Mitch mentioned. I'm joined by Eric Stamelos, who is actually in London, but normally he's here with me in Greenwich, Connecticut. Just to give you quick background, even though Mitch covered it, we've been managing a risk parity mandate for Contra Costa for over 4 years now, and we've really enjoyed working with the staff and the board for many years prior to that. Today, our goal is to provide some insight into the managed future space, which I think will piggyback nicely on Mitch's comments. We are large producers of research on the investment management side, and that specifically includes the trend following space. So I think that's where we are well positioned to kind of present to you today. Our agenda will outline kind of the investment thesis for trend following strategies, talk about their construction, and then identify the potential benefits of allocating to such strategies. And with that, I will have the honor of introducing my colleague, Eric Stamelos. He is a managing director on our macro strategies team. He's been with AQR for over 8 years and focuses most of his time on the portfolio management and research initiatives within our trend following strategies. And so with that, Eric, I will let you take over now.
Great, thank you. And thanks everybody for entertaining us and having us join your meeting today. Hopefully we can provide you with some interesting insights around trend and you know, broadly, just the managed futures strategy in a broader context. Again, so as Kim referenced, the main agenda here today is to really cover, I think, three main points. I think first, what we'd like to do is just, you know, establish managed futures as really it's been a longstanding strategy. And one of the reasons that it works and generates profits is that it can take advantage of a lot of behavioral biases that we see exhibited in markets, particularly things like underreaction, and herding that you see when a lot of investors like to do what other people are doing. And it's generally a strategy that uses a systematic approach. One of the core points of it is to use trend following. Second, what we'd like to cover is just how we construct a trend following portfolio. How do you actually make the many choices that you have to make to actually put together a portfolio to achieve long-term success? And then thirdly, and probably the most important point of the presentation today is just to highlight and really just communicate that as a strategy, trend following can really deliver two key attributes. We call it the dual mandate of managed futures and trend following, which is the ability to generate long-term positive returns with the ability to see significant positive returns during severe and prolonged market downturns. That's really one of the core objectives that we see from managed future strategies. So first, just to establish AQR, we do publish a significant amount of research on a number of different strategies, but we do have a dedicated research focus on trend following and on managed futures more broadly. We've really been publishing now for well over a decade because we see the value of this kind of an allocation, whether it's a standalone allocation for clients to use as tools in their own portfolio constructions, or even when we put together multi-strategy solutions for investors, oftentimes what goes into those will include some managed futures because of its unique attributes. And so much of what we do is really supported by the decades of research that we've done, across different questions that have come up over the years around trend following strategies. So again, we'll highlight first again, what is this? What is managed futures? At a high level, again, it's a strategy that does aim to deliver long-term positive returns do so with a very low correlation to traditional markets. And what that means is, in general, what we've seen is close to zero correlation to traditional markets like equities and fixed income, for example, over a long period of time. As the name managed future suggests, it uses futures as a primary tool to gain the exposures and to implement a strategy. And futures markets, they've been around for a very long time. They've been traded in the United States, since the 1800s with the advent of, commercial agriculture. And really were designed to hedge for farmers, really, to be able to hedge their price risk. And so the markets have been around for quite some time and have evolved into being a low cost, efficient way to gain exposure, not just to, commodities that, might be produced in the agricultural sector, but really across a whole host of different markets and assets. And you can see some of the examples here on the page where, futures markets can be used to gain exposure to global equities, to fixed income, currencies, and also commodity markets. And as I've already referenced a couple of times, managed futures, it's somewhat synonymous. And the reason it's synonymous is because we found that one of the primary strategies that can explain what's going on in a trend following, in a managed futures portfolio is a trend following approach, is a trend following set of signals. And what that means is a set of signals really that
Eric, are you
still there? I think we lost you, Eric.
Appears to be frozen in time, but hopefully we'll melt and come back.
It's frozen in the UK.
Exactly. And I imagine you all were seeing the same thing I did. I think the Zoom controls were blocking some of the screen. So we'll make sure to clear that up.
I just think it's nice of Eric to join us during happy hour because, according to my calculations,
it's late. I was going to say
6:30 in London.
Yeah, it's a little later there.
It's only a Wednesday. I don't know. Is there happy hour on Wednesdays?
Not sure.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere in the world at all times.
That's true. All right. Let's see. Just ping me that he's coming back on.
There he is.
I see him.
Yeah, you're not quite, you're still on, well, you were on mute, Eric. I don't know if you're on, still on. I'm showing you on mute.
Eric, I can share my screen if that's easier for you.
Yeah, why don't we try that? Because something seemed to not work there. So sorry about that, everybody.
No, that's quite all right.
Yeah. So, yeah, as we were describing, so what is a trend following approach? The idea of trend following is to see an established trend in a market, buy it. So if it's, for example, if the market is trending upwards, we want to take a long position, buy into that trend, and benefit as that trend continues. Conversely, if you see a market falling, what you'll do is you'll sell short that assets, you'll have a position and benefit as that market continues to sell off. And that's the basic kind of concept around trend following. So if you move to the next page, just to get a sense for, let's go to the next page. So we're moving backwards. There we go. Yeah. So again, how can you think about what it is that trend following is really benefiting and profiting from? The main idea is really that trend following is really a strategy that profits from markets going from a good state to a great state or from a bad state to a worse. So it profits from good to great and bad to worse. So just a couple of examples that I'll highlight. I won't go through every single one on the page here, but over on the left-hand side of the page, on the top, you have a good to great example where in the post-pandemic environment, you had, for example, commodities rallying as you had significant amounts of reopening demand for a lot of different types of commodities. And that led to a very good upward trend. And so a trend following strategy would buy into that. And then the commodity price, let's just say, went from a good to a great state as you basically ended up with continued supply chain pressures and also geopolitical risks rising earlier this year. And so that's exactly the kind of environment where trend following can deliver some very meaningful returns. Similarly, on the bottom part on the left-hand side of the page, you can see an example where, for example, we'll see the equity market during the global financial crisis. In that environment, what you ended up seeing was from, call it, you know, January to all the way up until, you know, right before the peak of the crisis, you still saw a very significant downtrend in the market. And again, a trend follower would establish a short position there, again, to benefit as that trend continued, and in the peak of the crisis would generate very significant positive returns. This is one of the main reasons and main sources for trend following returns during crisis periods. And it's one of the reasons that it becomes such an attractive strategy for many portfolios and asset allocations. So what causes just these kinds of dynamics to be exhibited in markets? We ascribe to a view that here on page 9 that really it boils down to a lot of the behavioral dynamics that we see, not just really markets, that we all as human beings really are prone to day in and day out. Clearly, as human beings and as rational, you know, individuals, we are all able to make rational choices, you know, every single day. But the thing is, you need to make a conscious effort, and oftentimes you need to incorporate a lot of information and really just understand how all the fundamentals will come together to make the right choice. The main problem is time in a lot of cases, right? We can be faced with dozens of different decisions every day about anything, and oftentimes we're not sitting there making a conscious effort to make those decisions. We might react, whether we react emotionally, that's oftentimes a way we can make decisions, but we can also react based on some existing set of beliefs and make decisions, you know, based on that. But oftentimes what happens when we use our more behavioral system to make those kinds of decisions, we often make a lot of errors. And that's what we basically see taking place in markets, that there is the persistence of a number of errors when market participants are transacting in different assets and setting prices. So some examples of this, I think one of the key set of errors that tend to be made in markets is underreaction to information. You get new information, but markets tend to underreact. Why? Well, there are a number of biases that we can point to that can lead to that. For example, anchoring biases. So on the top left graph or exhibit there, I show, you know, somebody who, you know, a year ago saw their neighbor sell their house for some very significant amount of money. And then, you know, now today, as a result of, you know, very significant increases in mortgage rates and interest rates, are being told that, well, you have to lower your price, and they lower it by $1. Why don't they lower it by more? The fundamentals would argue that you should maybe lower it by 10 or 15 or maybe more percent. But what happens is many investors or market participants tend to be anchored to where prices were. And so the graph here on the right-hand side of the page shows that. It shows the fundamental value, which would be indicated by this maroon line here, would be, let's say, the house price. The catalyst would be a significant increase in interest rates. And so the house price should go down. But again, markets are somewhat slow to react because, again, investors or sellers of the house would be anchored to where prices were. And that creates an underreaction that creates a trend. And eventually what you do see is the trend continue and can even really overshoot. And so you can see that there can be aspects of overreaction. On the bottom left, we show an exhibit that shows one of the other kinds of biases that can exist that can cause overreaction, where you can see herding effects, where the behavior of a group or of just a number of other people will influence what you might do as an individual. And we see this kind of herding behavior in markets. We see it in the analyst community as they're forecasting the future price of something or the economic outlook for a country or a set of variables. And that kind of herding behavior can cause trends to persist even more. And so at the end of the day, really what trend following is it's taking advantage of these kinds of behavioral elements in markets. There's another aspect too, where we see, for example, nonprofit seeking market participants like central banks. Their job is not to make a profit in markets. And sometimes they also can create some of these types of underreactions, for example, in markets. And we're there to basically be on the other side of that and be able to generate a profit from those kinds of systematic biases that exist. So if we do see these kinds of biases in markets and we do see trends, then the system I described where you're buying as you're seeing a price, let's say, rise with the expectation that it will continue to rise, or you're going to short with the expectation it'll continue to fall, should lead to a profitable strategy. And so because we have futures markets, you know, data that goes back many, many decades, we can test a simple 1 month, 3 month, 12 month trend following system where we look back over the course of many different markets to get a sense for how trends might behave. What evidence do we have, firstly, to say that behavioral biases exist? I've presented this in a somewhat theoretical, stylized context. If you go to the next page, on page 11, we can see that in real time, we know that we can see evidence for these kinds of behavioral biases. When we look at, for example, as I mentioned before, the analyst community can be a very important source of behavioral bias and a place you can see it. And one example here on the lower or in the upper right, for example, what this is showing is how analysts back in 2014 were digesting the slowing down of a global economy, essentially. And what the bars there represent, each bar represents the cumulative revision to the original sort of forecast as time goes on. And so what you see is this very clear trend. The analysts were underreacting to the degree of deterioration that was going on in the global economy. And as a result, what you see is month after month, as they were to reassess where they thought the global economy was going, they would revise downwards their view as to the global growth picture. What you can see here for something that's very tied to the global growth picture, something like crude oil, which obviously is, it has a lot of economic sensitivity, initially doesn't even react to that picture until later, and then eventually does fall. There are a number of other dynamics that play around that time as well, but it's one example of how you can see that there's a very persistent presence of underreaction and how markets also display a degree of underreaction, even when fundamentals are changing in real time. And this is, again, now more real world evidence. And we've had that, again, more recently in places like inflation and interest rates, where there's, markets were clearly, and also the analysts were clearly underreacting to the dynamics that were unfolding late last year and into this year. So if we do see these kinds of behavioral biases present, and we can put together a model to buy assets again, buy them as they're rising, going long, sell them and benefit as they're and benefit as they would continue to sell off. On the next page, what you'll see is the results of trends and trend following in individual markets where we have that data across as many different markets and asset classes as possible. If you see a positive result, it means that that market tends to have trends over a long period of time. For this to be a good strategy, you'd expect to see it working in, let's say, a majority of the cases. But basically what the results showed is it basically works nearly everywhere. And that's a pretty robust result to say that if I look at different asset classes, equities, fixed income, currencies, and commodities, each bar there represents the risk-adjusted return, the excess return, to just trend following on that asset over a long period of time. Every asset displays here a positive return, which means that they all display these kinds of trends because of these types of behavioral elements that are present in markets, and they're somewhat universal. They really do exist everywhere. So when you put it all together in a portfolio, what we end up with is a strategy that, again, we think is important to define via this dual mandate. If you go to the next page, the idea here is what we see from our own results and from the results of our studies is getting long-term positive returns on average. That's the first part of the mandate. And then secondly, the ability to get positive returns during very significant downturns in especially equity markets, but we really also see it true for big bond market declines, big commodity market declines, any kind of scenario where you see these good to great, bad to worse situations in big, broader macro markets, those are going to be very good environments for trend following to deliver positive outcomes. So how do we actually do it? Let's move on to the next section here, implementing trend following. Let's go on to the next page. You know, if we were all now to sit, around the table and let's decide, how are we going to trend follow? What are we going to trend follow in? And what would a portfolio look like? We have a lot of choices to make. Generally, based on all of the work that we've done, what we find is that it's very important to diversify as much as possible when it comes to trend following sets of choices. For example, in the asset universe, we can define many different asset classes. For example, as I mentioned before, the futures markets give us access to global equities, fixed income, currencies, and commodities. We definitely want to have access to all of those kinds of things because, as we'll show you soon, those having exposure to all of those increase our chances for long-term success. And even within certain asset classes, you still want to try and find more opportunities for trends. You might look within commodities, not just to, let's say, the agricultural sector, you might look to the energy sector and the metal sector. Within metals, you might want to look to precious metals and industrial metals, and you want to be able to have the ability to extract trends from all of those different asset groups. Signals are another key question. How do you determine when something is trending? What look-back horizon do you need to establish that a market is moving? What we generally find is you want to be diversified across many different types of horizons ranging from very short term to longer term, short term being something like 1 month, longer term being something like 1 year, but combining those. And so when there's agreement, there's a clear trend and you want to continue to bet on that. But additionally, there's some room for innovation as well. The idea is to potentially also use some fundamental information, just like we showed, for example, with the analysts and their forecasts and how those trend. There could be some interesting ways to link that to the trend following views we might expect to see in markets. And so, again, there might be also room for fundamental information to play or to play a role in constructing a trend following set of signals. So then when you get asset, all these assets across all these different asset classes and all these signals, you have to put them all together in a portfolio. And that's where having, again, a systematic process becomes really important, because we can't have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of analysts like doing this every day for each market. You want a system that can do this in an automated, systematic way, and then also put it together in a way that, from a portfolio perspective, satisfies our clients' objectives. So things, for example, like risk levels are very important at the portfolio level to define with a client. And we can, you know, for example, construct trend following portfolios at different levels of risk. And then from there, the goal is to manage those risks appropriately, deliver the exposures and the attributes that we've set out to deliver, while also engineering ways to improve the diversification, the efficiency of the portfolio, reduce any sort of cost, and very, very importantly, keep it very liquid. Trend following strategies over the long term have been known for being very liquid strategies. In fact, being able to deliver liquidity to investors during some of the most difficult times in markets and for the rest of their portfolios. So why do we look to diversify? So on the next page, on page 16, just to give you a sense, what this exhibit is really meant to show is, let's just say we decided that we were just gonna focus on one asset class and we were to trend follow on that. Or, you know, let's just say we could also put it all together in, you know, put all these different asset classes together in one portfolio. Well, what we show in every year for the last, you know, two decades, essentially, is we sort each year from the best performing asset class strategy to the worst performing asset class strategy. And we also show an equal weight strategy, which is the purple box there. And basically what happens and what you'll see here is that the purple box tends to actually be closer to the top or at the top more consistently than any of the other underlying asset classes. In other words, by being diversified, you're able to essentially beat the average more consistently. And by doing that over time, really outperform and do a better job than if you were to just focus on any one of these asset class groups. Because it might be the case that if we were to look over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, it might be one asset class that's performing really well. That doesn't mean you just want to bet on that going forward. You still want to have a diversified mix, because all of that can and will change, you know, through time. On the next page, we show something similar, but by the different horizons, whether you're trend following based on a short-term horizon or a much longer-term horizon, we again sort from best performing to worst performing, and then also show an equal weighted approach in the dark blue box. And again, you kind of see something similar where, again, it tends to be towards the top, if not at the top, a little bit more consistently versus any of the other individual asset class horizons. And so you're better off being more diversified than focusing on any one of these underlying components. This generally gets at a broader point around trend, which is that, that diversification just increases the opportunities for a trend follower. Trends might not appear in all places at all times, but you want to be able to find them when they do appear and allocate to them in a nicely risk-managed fashion. Putting it all together on the next page, again, when we put together a portfolio, how does it work? Well, let's just say in the current environment, as an example, you know, we've seen equity markets falling, we've seen bond markets falling, we've seen the dollar being very strong and rallying. We've also seen a number of underlying commodities also generally performing positively across, you know, different, different individual commodities over the year. And so a portfolio today of trend following might look like being short equity, short bonds, long the dollar, and long commodities on the expectation that those trends would continue. So how do we do it? As I mentioned before, futures markets are really one of the primary tools that managed futures and trend followers can use to get the exposures in the portfolio. And they offer some significant advantages in terms of being liquid and really allowing the portfolio to really maintain a very strong cash position and liquidity profile across many different environments. So the way it would work is, for example, an investor would allocate something like $100 million to a trend follower. An investor would also choose an acceptable level of risk. We define risk as volatility in the way we like to think about things. And for a trend following portfolio, a typical level of volatility might be something like 10% annualized. That annualized volatility is very similar to that of a 60-40 stock bond portfolio through time. So the kinds of swings and returns you might see in a 60-40 portfolio, you could see something similar in a 10% volatility managed futures portfolio. Some investors might want something higher octane, something like a 15% volatility, which is more like a stock or a broader equity market level of volatility. So the way it would work is an investor would choose the correct level of or the appropriate level of volatility. And so let's just take the 10% example. With the $100 million, what would happen is $10 million of that would actually go to supporting the futures positions that would give us the exposures we wanted, the kinds of bets that we wanted to take. The remainder of it would sit in a cash account as an unencumbered cash account, essentially to help manage the overall risk of the portfolio and keep the portfolio also very liquid. If you wanted something higher octane, again, that would mean allocating a little bit more to the futures position. So that would mean, for example, a 15% volatility would require 1.5 times the margin. And so that would be about $15 million dollars allocated to support the futures positions and $85 million in free cash. The exposures would look like what you see on the bottom half of the page. So you could see, for example, short equities, short fixed income, long the dollar, long commodities. And so for the $100 million invested in a 10% volatility strategy, the overall level of exposure might be close to $200 million. So there's some leverage there. There's some ability to get more exposure relative to the amount of capital put in. And again, that is supported by that $10 million of collateral or what we call margin to support the futures positions. For a higher volatility fund, again, the $100 million would actually equate to something more like $300 million of exposure. Supported by a smaller amount of collateral or margin. But importantly, the leverage that you get from futures, if you go back up to the balance sheets that you see on this page, you can see on the debt side, there's nothing there because there's no borrowed capital. We're not borrowing to get leverage. It's inherent in the nature of the futures contract and how the futures contract is traded by putting smaller amount of capital relative to the exposure that you actually want to achieve. And so that's where the cash becomes very important in managing the overall risk, but keeping the overall portfolio as well very liquid. And that's, again, just the general kind of nuts and bolts of how a managed future strategy can be put together. So I'll conclude here with just now, what are the long-term results that we've seen from some of our analyses and longer-term studies on trend? So first is on the return side. If we take, we have it, as I said before, futures markets data that goes back many decades, and we put it, together in a portfolio that targets, let's say, 2/3 the risk of the equity market, what would its 5-year rolling returns look like? That is represented by the light blue rolling series you see there. And then we also show on the darker green series, the rolling series for the U.S. equity market. And so you can see that there's risk in both of these things. But interestingly, the average return for both of them are very similar to one another in this context. And so even though the trend following portfolio is taking 2/3 of the risk, it can deliver similar returns to equity. So it does have an equity-like return profile, but very importantly, you can see that when one zigs, the other might zag, or you can go through extended periods where, for example, in the 60s into the 70s and early 80s, trend following performed very well, while equity markets had a very long-term stretch of very difficult performance. And the reverse might be true at different times as well, but this is the point of diversification. They're supposed to behave differently at different points in time, but interestingly, over the long term, deliver attractive and even in this case, similar returns. How does it look?
Sorry, Eric, I don't mean to interrupt. I suppose I do in a little way here. I just wanted to kind of emphasize the message that you're relaying here is that, the trend strategy, you can target different levels of vol, whether it's two thirds of equity like vol or even equity like a vol, but the return pattern, it can be volatile, right? If you're looking at the light blue line, there are periods of pretty large drawdowns. And so this strategy stands in contrast to some of the other pieces that already are in the risk mitigating or, the construction that Mitch is talking about earlier, right? Some of those pieces are much more kind of short duration bond-like or, tend to eke out kind of low single digit, mid single digit type returns over long periods of time. This one has a little bit of juice in it, and you can see that from the period, the returns that Mitch showed us earlier from the first 6 months of the year or the trailing year where, trend was up 30%, right? It's up 30. There are potentially periods where it could be down 30. And so you just want to kind of lay the groundwork for the trustees to be comfortable with that in putting a position like this on. And AQR and these kind of folks have lots of different ways to kind of mitigate that and do things around that. But at the root of it, that's kind of the nature of the strategy.
Yeah, we would agree. And again, oftentimes when you see the strategy like trend underperforming, it does tend to be in periods where there's not really much happening in other parts of the portfolio, or the portfolios are tending to see very stable outcomes. So again, it's really designed in a diversifying way relative to the rest of an investor's portfolio. On the next slide, I have something similar with respect to bonds. Again, bonds show a different risk profile, obviously relative to the trend strategy I showed before. But you still see the same characteristic. You do see that during periods that can be difficult, for example, for bonds, and that's the four decades from the 1940s all the way through the 70s, you did see significant negative returns from owning a number of fixed income assets during that period, but trend following would have delivered positive returns. So you can see this kind of diversification, not just relative to equities, but also to bonds as well. And again, there will be periods where one might outperform the other, but the point is that they're doing it, in a different way and in a diversifying way. And then I think one of the final kind of points to make here around the long-term results, again, we've seen, obviously 2022 is a very important year in the sense that markets are exhibiting some significant volatility, some very contrasting dynamics relative to the last decade. But even before this year, we saw in 2008 trend strategies deliver really strong returns. And we'd always ask the question whether that was just luck or whether there could be a real tendency or something inherent in the strategy that can help deliver that type of crisis alpha. And we do see that there's a mechanical effect, right? When we talked about the good to great, bad to worse, crises, especially the big and more protracted ones, aren't those that happen overnight. They tend to happen more gradually. And as a result, when we look at the worst drawdowns for a 60-40 portfolio going back over 100 plus years of data, what we find and what you see on this page is, and we listed chronologically there, is a tendency for trend following to deliver very strong positive returns. So that's that second part of the dual mandate, the ability to be able to deliver, almost, really hedge-like type returns in the right environments. Now, it's not perfect, right? Because there will be, there even on this page, there are two examples where trend still had some negative performance in some of these. Generally, it's when there's a very sharp, sudden correction, and also especially if that just reverses and retraces and the world is fine again very quickly. In those kinds of environments, trend can be challenged because by definition, what you ended up with is not a trend, but a big sort of V-shape type of market. But in other cases, it can be, and in most other crisis type cases, and really where it matters the most to client portfolios is in those more protracted, prolonged, and severe downturns. It is notable that the first 6 months of this year actually does show up on this page because the date is not wrong on this. It actually does go back at looking at, you know, market data and our, you know, model trend portfolio all the way back to 1880. And yes, the first 6 months of this year is a top 10 drawdown in the 60-40. But like in many other cases, again, trend following should have been expected to deliver good positive returns commensurate with what you saw in these other, in, you know, kind of more protracted periods historically.
Yeah, I think a lot of us can attest that this has been a top 10 event in our regular daily lives. The first 6 months of this year were pretty crazy.
Yeah,
to put it mildly.
Yeah, and it's exactly that craziness that trend following tries to capture and generate return from. And in fact, the bigger the market moves, the more unusual they seem from that perspective, and the more prolonged and more persistent they are, the better the likelihood of the returns that you can get from the strategy. Again, so just I think just a couple of final thoughts of how to visualize trend following. You can extend this concept of, you know, it benefits from large moves in markets. Again, the big benefit comes when there are big down moves, but you can also benefit from big up moves. And so what that means is when you take a look at the returns of trend following and relate them to the, you know, any market really, whether it's the equity market, commodity market, a fixed income market, you end up with an interesting profile. And that's what we're trying to show on this page here. So on the x-axis, we show for every year the return to the U.S. equity market. So in 2008, for example, U.S. equity market was down, you know, close to 40%, let's say. And trend following, which is represented on the y-axis, the return of that strategy would have been something like positive 20%. You could see the first 6 months of 2022, you know, again, markets down a little over 20%. Trend following delivered a similar positive 20%. When we look at this data across a very long period of time, what we find is this classic smile property, this thing we call convexity, which is really meant to just describe how the returns can actually get better as you see these more crazy, these bigger type moves in markets. And it can work on both sides. It can work in terms of large, you know, big down moves, but also large up moves. And there are very few strategies that display this kind of profile. When we're thinking about it, and wanting to understand what kind of drives some of these, you know, big kind of move environments, we did find that there is a very tight relationship between, you know, large moves in markets and also just large macro volatility. So we played around with this concept a little bit. And on the next page, we did find that, you know, inflation, for example, this is something that's obviously very important to us today. It's driving a lot of the market outcomes today. But if we look at inflation through this lens and put that on the x-axis, so in other words, the further left you move, you have a big downside shock to inflation. The further right you move, you're going to have a big upside shock to inflation. And then the y-axis is telling you how is trend following performing in those environments. And interestingly, you see the same type of convex profile. The bigger the economic shock, the bigger the moves that there are, and hence the better the trend following returns are. And it is interesting that, again, you know, Q1 and Q2 of this year, you start to go out of the bounds of the chart historically on the kind of inflation surprise data that we do have. And so again, trend following was able to deliver really strong returns in that kind of environment. So hopefully you have a better sense for what the strategy is, how it gets put together. I know we did cover a lot of material. But I think, again, the key takeaway really is that it's a strategy that can really deliver long-term, you know, positive returns, you know, good returns during down market events. As Jay mentioned, again, it is a strategy that does have risk. So, you know, if you do look at the middle part of this chart, you know, you see a lot of down, you know, or dots in the zone of you know, being below zero for, you know, on the y-axis. That does mean the strategy does lose money at different times. But the point is it should do so in a way that's different relative to stocks and bonds. And in fact, oftentimes when, again, stocks and bonds are seeing very big downturns, trend can do very well. So the point is to have something complementary to the rest of the portfolio from an asset class perspective.
And while it does lose money, sometimes, as Eric said, you'll see that this line crosses on a positive note on the y-axis. So on average, we expect it to make money.
I think we're all on the same page on that one. We have the same expectation.
Are there any other questions?
I don't see any other hands up. Let me take a quick check of the gallery here. If you want to stop screen sharing, it's a little easier to see, but there we go. Yeah, no, I think we're good. So thank you to Eric. I know it's late where you are. Or at least
No, my pleasure. Happy to do it.
All right. Well, great. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Keep going and making money. That's the bottom line.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, Tim. Any final thoughts? Well, you probably can't talk, but.
No, I just want to reiterate, this is one of the strategies we're looking at for potential inclusion. So we want the trustees to be aware of kind of the basic dynamics of how it works. And, you know, we thought AQR is a good party to come in and provide that overview for the trustees. So this is just laying the groundwork for some future recommendations that we think are going to come down in the next 6 months or so.
Okay, well, that's helpful. Foreshadowing, we call that. Yes, exactly. Very good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Get well soon, if you can. All right.